Welcome to the Wild Hour Dealer Review. The Wild Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on freedom when we come back. You know, we Americans are the most litigious people in the world, and we believe in our lawyers with a kind of religious fervor. We've been taught from early childhood that he who represents himself in court has a fool for a client. But what would you say if a plumber said that? What if your plumber said, he who fixes his own pipes has a fool for a client? Or what if a carpenter said that? What if your carpenter said, he who fixes his own steps has a fool for a client? Well, doesn't our common sense tell us that a plumber or a carpenter who couldn't fix his own pipes or his own steps is incompetent? You know, my common sense tells me that a lawyer who can't represent himself in court has to be just as incompetent as that plumber or that carpenter. Well, listen to James Nielsen. He's a professor of law at the Hastings Law School. When he said, quote, it is a fact that a student can graduate from this, the fourth largest law school in the United States, and without ever having written a pleading, a contract, a will, a promissory note, or a deed. And he said it's worse than that. Most students graduate from this law school without ever having seen a real honest-to-God pleading, contract, will, promissory note, or a deed. And a student can graduate without having set foot in a courtroom and without ever having spoken to or on behalf of a person in need of advice or counsel. And a student can graduate without once being exposed to the operation of the rules of court. Now, whatever else may be said about this license issued by the state bar, he said, let it be said that for these students and their clients, that it is a cruel hoax, unquote. That was Professor James Nielsen of the Hastings Law School, the fourth largest law school in the nation, by the way. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's 417-273-4967. And while you're at it, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. It's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free. Now, courtroom strategy and procedure, our school, is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for your free general law CD package. That's the place to start. Again, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. Freedom. You know, oftentimes people call the law school. We invite them to call the law school, and they'll call, and they'll start off with, well, I'm from the People's Republic of California or the People's Republic of New York or something like that. And they're complaining about the freedoms that they have lost or believe they've lost or believe that they should have or ought to have or something along that line. And I remember, I think it was Upton Sinclair that said there was, or somebody similar, I mean, it may not have been Upton, but he said, there is no man who can be more enslaved than a slave who believes he's free. Now, that's one of those very profound statements that you run across every once in a while, you know, and you say, God, I wish I'd have thought of that. Then I'd get all the glory, and people would look at me, and they'd say, well, God, that guy Gordon's really smart. You know, he comes up with these neat, crafty sayings, you know. Well, I look at that, and I said, you know, I think that's pretty true. And I think when we listen to one of those wise old sayings, I call them, that we say, well, my God, that is, there's more truth to that than meets the eyeball. There's no man who is more enslaved than a slave who believes that he is free. And we use this word freedom quite often. You know, President Bush, almost every time I see him on TV, he's talking about freedom and democracy and voting and the right to choose and regime change and protecting the American people. And he's just got all these neat plans. I was watching TV the other night, and somebody was on the Lehrer News Hour, and they said, we got to have health insurance for everybody in America. And I think that's really, really just real peachy keen that all you people out there are real concerned about George Gordon, and you want to make sure that I have health insurance. Now, I'm working my heart out to avoid it. I'm trying to avoid health insurance. I don't want Arnold Schwarzenegger enforcing upon me compulsory health insurance, and I'm going to stay the hell away from California. And I'm going to stay the hell away from Massachusetts and hope that my legislators here in Missouri don't get this bug in their bonnet and say, well, we got to make sure George Gordon's got insurance, so we're going to pass a new law and make him buy insurance like they do with auto insurance. You know, they want to make sure that I have auto insurance to protect me and everybody around me, I guess. And I don't deny that's a good idea. Shucks, I'm just a plumber. I hardly know what's good for me, and I'm glad there's all these real smart people up in the state houses and the Congress of the state figuring out what's good for me. And in so doing, they're protecting you, the American public, from fools like me, George Gordon. I remember Mel Gibson in the movie Braveheart. and about the last scene, you know, they caught him and they're going to kill him now. See, and so they're torturing the guy. I think they've stretched him out on a rack over here, and just before he dies, just before they cut him in half or cut his head off or something, I've forgotten how he died, but he screamed out, "Freedom!" Very dramatic ending to the movie. And I don't know about the rest of you people in the world, but here in America, freedom, you know, is like mom and apple pie. Freedom is something that we learn in public school, starting about preschool or kindergarten or something like that. And we pledge allegiance to the flag, and they teach us to be real patriotic here in this country. Or at least they used to. I don't know about today, but they used to do that. And I'm not opposed to it. I'm just pointing out that, you know, people are just real excited about freedom. And I thought, does anybody really know what the hell freedom is? I can remember one time I was talking about rights in court when I first started in law. You know, I got real excited, and I used to preach to the judge when I'd get into court. I'd preach him a civics lesson, you know, on freedom and rights and constitutional law and one thing and another. And many of the judges, you know, they'd sit back and they'd listen to me preach at them, you know, and they'd shake their head. Yeah, I agree with that. Mm-hmm. Before they'd rule against me and throw me out, you know, they'd shake their head and say, "God, that Gordon's really profound here today. You know, he's waxing eloquent and all." One time there was a judge. He wasn't an old guy. He was a young fellow, and his name was Schmidt, Judge Schmidt. And he was a magistrate judge there in the 4th Judicial District back in the early 80s there in Boise, Idaho. And I'd done a number of cases in his court, and I was very interested in civil rights, very interested in law and rights and privileges and immunities and the Constitution and one thing and another. And the judge was pretty sympathetic to me. I brought in a number of cases challenging bureaucratic agencies and bureaucrats and one thing and another. And one day I was walking down the hall in the courthouse, and it just happens that this is a long hallway, and the judge's courtrooms are on each side of the hallway, and then next to the judge's courtroom is his chambers, his office, which that door also opens onto the hallway. And a lot of times the judges would have their doors open so they could look down the hall. And evidently the judge saw me walking down the hall. He got up, he came over the door, stuck his head out, and he said, "Oh, Mr. Gordon, have you got a minute?" And I said, "Well, Judge, for you, I've got all day." And so I went in, sat down, and closed the door, and we chit-chatted a little bit. And he said, I've been reading your brief and one thing and another, and I've watched your cases with great interest and one thing and another. Pretty soon the conversation turned to this thing called rights, and he asked me, he said, "I notice here that you claim a lot of rights quite often, and you talk about rights in your legal writing." And I said, "Yes, sir. Yes, I talk about rights, and I'm very concerned about my rights, and I'm concerned about the erosion of my rights and so on." So he asked this question. He said, "Well, how many rights do you think you have?" I mean, that's almost like Oliver Wendell Holmes, you know, being asked by his law clerk, "You know, how many laws do you know?" And here's Judge Schmidt, and he says, "How many rights do you think you have?" And I mulled that over, you know, there's dead silence here, you know, this, I'm mulling this over, and I don't know, you know, 15, 20, 25, 30 seconds or something like that. You know, I looked up and I said, "You know, I don't know how many rights I have." So he perked right up and he said, "Well, the last time I was reading a book here written by thus and such," and he cited the book, he said, "law professor says you have 1,100 rights, you know, around 1,100, you know, rights that are available to you as an American citizen sitting here in Boise, Idaho. You have about 1,100 rights." And I said, "Well, I'm amazed. I would have thought that it was more like 100 rights." And he says, "No." He said, "Social Security alone has 108 benefits. And if you have a Social Security number, these are called civil rights as opposed to inalienable rights. And you have about 108 of those at last count," he said. "And then, of course, you have your constitutional rights to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. And then you have the right to be free from fear, the right to be to this and that." And he cited three or four more. And he cited the Ten Commandments. He said, "You know, those guarantee you certain common rights." And I said to him, I said, "Well, I'm really amazed. Really amazed that I've got that many rights." And so I got to mulling that over a little bit. The conversation wound down and I left. And I said, "Well, gee, now I know I've got 1,100 rights." But during the conversation, the judge revealed to me a secret that nobody seems to know. Nobody seems to know this secret. Here's what it is. Whether you have 1,100 rights available to you or not is irrelevant and immaterial, because the only rights that are ever available to you at any given time are the rights that you can claim on the courtroom floor. And if you can't claim that right on the courtroom floor, it does not exist for you. It doesn't exist. Let me give you an illustration. From time to time, I will present a program or series of programs on a legal topic, and let's just pick one, vaccination. And in this state, Missouri, like most states, we have compulsory vaccination laws. These are called laws of general applicability. They apply to everybody. Well, they apply to everybody but SEPT. And there are some but SEPTs that are written into every law. And if you didn't have these but SEPTs written in here, then you would be violating these people's constitutional rights. For instance, you have a constitutional right to the practice of your religion. So if government came along and said, "Well, everybody has to have vaccinations, then those churches, those religious groups that believe that vaccination is a desecration of the temple of God, and that it's a sin, and that it's wicked and evil, and we see you'd be violating their rights to free exercise. So, as a result, under our constitutional system here in the United States, you have to make allowances for people. Furthermore, there are some medical conditions. Let's suppose that you, like Mr. Perry, down in Texas, Governor Perry the other day, mandated that all females in the state be vaccinated with this antiviral cancer vaccine. And it caused quite a little flap, you know. And so I'm sitting back here, you know, as a law teacher, and I say, ha ha, that's obviously a law of general applicability that applies to all the slaves. It doesn't apply to the free men of the state of Texas. And that's because, let's suppose that there's just one female in Texas, just one. And this female is allergic to this vaccine for medical reasons. Maybe this person has some kind of a condition, you know, like an immune response condition, maybe lupus or something on that order. And this vaccine would injure, damage, or possibly even kill this young woman. Are you telling me that she has to line up and take that vaccine anyway, even though it's a medical threat to her life, her liberty, and her property? Well, you know, if you think about it for a second, well, gee, no, but you know, some doctor would write that up and then take it in, and, you know, well, then there'd be an excuse made. She could go to school without. Okay, well, then there's one exception, then, isn't there? All right. Could there be two such women in Texas? Well, yeah, there could be two of them down there. Well, if there could be two, could there be four? Or eight, or 16, or 157, or 6,211, or so. So here's the point I'm making, that while you have this law of general applicability that applies to most people in Texas, it doesn't apply to everybody. So I suppose that you wanted to be exempted from this. Could there be any other exemptions, such as maybe a religious exemption? Maybe you're a Jehovah's Witness, or you belong to some other of these little cults or sects or denominations, and maybe they believe that vaccines in general are a desecration of the holy temple of God or the Holy Spirit or whatever, and so you object on religious grounds. Well, could there be just one of those in Texas? Well, I think there'd probably be one or two. And then 2, 5, 9, 11, 157, and so on up the line. So, gee, we've got two exemptions, medical and religious. Well, could you qualify for one of those medical or religious exemptions? Well, you know, typically if you're a Catholic, Protestant, or Jew, the answer is no. And if you're in good health and you don't have any extending health problems, the answer is no. And so you just line up and get your shot like everybody else. Where did the governor of the state of Texas get the power to order you to go get this vaccine? Now, he's not ordering the people of Texas. He's not ordering the adults in Texas. It's just all of the children of Texas. Where did he get this power to order the children of Texas, those that are, you know, 6th grade, 12 to, let's say, 18 or 21, maybe, I don't know exactly when the adult status encompasses you Texans, but we'll say it's 18. Where did he get that power? He got that power from the birth certificate. When you passed your seed through the fire to Moloch and gave your child to the state, and the state of Texas owns all of the children in Texas. And so when the governor of Texas comes forth and says, I want all of the children of Texas under the age of 18 vaccinated with this vaccine, what you're dealing with here is the doctrine of parens patriae, parens patriae. And the state who owns these children, just like you think you own those children, and you're going to take your kid in and you're going to have him vaccinated, the state of Texas believes they have that same power, and so they order that. And here's the strange part of it, they never tell you that. I mean, those of us that are engaged in law all know that, and we know where to go look it up in the legal encyclopedia under the doctrine of parens patriae. But, you know, that's a Latin term, and you people out there, I mean, the average truck driver, if I used the word parens patriae, he'd say, you do it and you have to clean it up. He doesn't know what the hell that means. He hasn't got a clue, and nobody in the public schools ever taught him, and so he doesn't know what he's involved in when he gets a marriage license or birth certificates and so on. But I just wanted to share it with you so that you'd know that there's nothing like a man who is a slave who believes he's free. Just no critters like him running around. That's when you believe that you're free. All right, so there's Mel Gibson, and there's a little story on freedom. Now let's take a look from the dictionary's point of view what freedom is. Looking at Webster's in the dictionary, it says, quality or state of being free, as liberation from slavery or imprisonment or restraint. Exemption from necessity and choice and action is or as the freedom of the will. Frankness, outspokenness, improper familiarity, ease, facility, boldness of conception or performance. Freedom from care. Freedom, liberty, license mean, as here compared, the power or condition of acting without compulsion. All right, it's the power or condition of acting without compulsion. Let's take a look at it with Governor Perry. Now, he says he wants all these children down here vaccinated, and then there's a bunch of parents down there that don't want to do that. Now, these parents that do not want to vaccinate their children evidently do not know about medical or religious exemptions, evidently. because they're complaining about it. I'm not. We have a compulsory vaccination law here in our state, and I've got a daughter. She's 18 years old, never had a shot in her life. Never had a shot. She went to public school for a short time, a couple of years. And we never got really excited about it. We always knew about the law. We always knew about the exemption, and we knew how to use it. And so we live our lives here, and we didn't have any problem at all. But I hear people complain about that, and they say, well, we've lost our freedom, or we don't have this or that freedom. I want to make a bold statement. All of the freedoms and privileges and immunities that you had in 1787, when George Washington and John Adams and Thomas Jefferson and all the founding fathers, you know, and Ben Franklin, all those guys met in Philadelphia, you know, to form hammer out our Constitution. All of those freedoms, privileges, and immunities that they had in 1787 are available to us today, you, me, and everybody around us in the year 2007. I can't think of a single one of those rights, privileges, and immunities, any of those freedoms that have been abridged or taken away. Not a one. And I have calls here. Before this day is ended, somebody's going to call on the phone and complain about his freedoms being impaired by Governor Perry over vaccinations in Texas. Or their rights are being abridged and their freedoms taken away by Governor Schwarzenegger in California over health insurance, or up in Massachusetts. Or you know, some other right, privilege, or immunity that you think you've got, should have, that some bureaucrat somewhere is threatening. So I just wanted to tell you right up front, they're all available to you. Now, I don't know whether you possess them or not. Here's an illustration. Let's suppose, for the sake of our discussion, you join the Air Force or the military. And as a result of that, somebody in authority, some sergeant, comes along and says to you, open your footlocker, I want to inspect it. And you say, well, wait a minute, I can remember going to school, and I've got a Fourth Amendment right to be secure in my person, houses, papers, and effects. And who do you think you are coming in here telling me to open up my footlocker and that you're going to inspect it without a search warrant? And so you say to the sergeant, you got to get a search warrant. And the sergeant, he gets a little uppity about this time, and he says, I don't need a search warrant. I remember I told a highway patrol lieutenant one time that he needed to get a court order to take my fingerprints, and he looked at me like I was suffering from the terminal stupids. And he said to me, what the hell do you mean? I have to get a search warrant, or I have to get a court order to take your fingerprint. So I cited to him Rule 30B2. We have a rule here in Missouri. It's not necessary in every state, but here in this state it is. And he was really surprised. Then we had a little altercation. And when it was all said and done, I didn't have to give him my fingerprints. And no judge would sign the order. Of course, if the judge signs the order, then you've got to give him the fingerprints. But fingerprints here in this state are protected in the same way that the Fourth Amendment protects your person's, houses, papers, and effects. And it's also a Fifth Amendment protection against testifying against yourself. How many people know that? How many people are arrested every day and are taken into the police station and are photographed and fingerprinted? And then the other day I was reading the International Forecaster, and Bob Chapman put a piece in there about DNA. You know, they're going to take your DNA sample, you know. And I just kind of sit here and shake my head, and I say, well, you know, if they arrest you and they haul you in there and they say, well, come on over here, we're going to take your picture. And you say, well, I don't want my picture taken. And the guy says, it's the law. You have to do it, or we're not going to turn you loose. And so, you know, most people walk over there and get their picture taken. And they don't challenge. They don't test. They don't probe to find out where these powers lie or who's got what power or who doesn't. They complain. They call me on the phone and complain about it. But they don't actually know themselves where these lines are drawn in the sand. They can see that their freedom of action is being taken away from them, that they are being compelled to do something that they don't want to do, and they relate that to freedom, and they say, well, we're losing our freedoms. I disagree with that. Nobody's taking my picture. Nobody's taking my fingerprints against my will or over my objection. Nobody's trying to take my DNA. They have tried in the past, and I resisted in the past, and I litigated in the past, and the law is pretty well established in this country. It was established long ago by the Supreme Court in an obscure case down in Mississippi called Davis versus Mississippi. Davis versus Old Miss. Now, it is true, and back in the civil rights era, we had a lot of policemen who violated people's rights and beat them up and did all kinds of bad things to them. I don't deny that that goes on to this day. In fact, the Supreme Court, Miranda versus Arizona, made a very blatant statement when they said that in America, in this country, there is probably one civil rights violation committed in every police department at least once a day. And there's about 40,000 of these police departments in America. So if the Supreme Court's analysis is correct, and you got 40,000 police departments, let's just plug that into my famous Texas Instruments EL-1197G3, 40,000. And let's just multiply that times 365 days in a year. That's 14,600,000 crimes a year committed by the police. 14,600,000 crimes. Now, there's about 14 million crimes committed in the United States by real criminals, assuming, of course, that the police are just amateurs and that they're not real criminals. They're just accidental criminals. They commit 600,000 more crimes than the real criminals a year. So that's 28,600,000 crimes a year being committed against you and me. half of them are committed by real criminals and half of them are committed by the police. I ask you, what the hell difference does it make who commits a crime against you? Haven't your rights been violated just as much by the guy that sticks a gun in your chest and steals your wallet, or the policeman who sticks you in his patrol car, handcuffs you, and hauls you off to jail and falsely arrests you or falsely imprisons you? All right, so when we're talking about freedom and Mel Gibson over here, the bottom line is you don't have any rights that you personally don't know about and can't claim. So if you think you've got this right, then you ought to look it up. And if you think that there's 1,100 rights out there, now I reported to you that that's what the judge reported to me, that if you're an average American, you have about 1,100 rights. Now, these rights don't all come from God. He gave us a bunch of rights. I don't know how many, but I'd say 25 or 30. There's only 133 laws in the scripture, 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments. This guy can run the entire universe on a handful of laws. Last time I heard, there are 2.5 million laws in the United States, and they're being added to at the rate of 37 pages a day, or 47 pages a day. I think it's 47 pages a day. Did you get that? 2.5 million laws in the United States. Hell, your traffic code has 2,000 in it. You've got three times as many statutes in your traffic code, in your state, that you're subject to by your driver's license, than the entire biblical law code in its entirety. And for some reason, Americans, I can't speak for everybody now, but Americans believe that the more laws you have, the safer, more comfortable, the better society is. And so some little kid gets killed, and so they say, we got to have a Megan's Law. Whatever we do, do not execute the child molester. Don't execute some pervert. Make him register so that we can live next door to this guy, but we want to know. And so we want this guy registered so that he can live next door to us. Why would you want to live next door to a child molester? Why would you want to live on the same block or the same cul-de-sac with a child molester? So when I look in the scripture, I find that the penalty for child molestation is death. Go check it out for yourself. It's in Leviticus chapter 18. It has a lot to say about sex and sex crimes there. And there's a law in the Bible that says thou shalt not commit adultery. Of course, we don't practice that in America, and we don't learn about that in church or Sunday school. At least if there's any churches in America teaching thou shalt not commit adultery, I haven't heard of. There may be some. There may be. But they're going to be about as rare as hen's teeth. Hey, we're at the halfway point here, and I've got to give you a reminder that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. And then we're heard 7 days a week around the world daily on the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open, and it's open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do that 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. There's another word here in addition to freedom. It's called liberty. And liberty is very similar to, not exactly the same, but very similar to this word freedom. We like to talk a lot here in America. You know, we beat our gums a lot. Here's what Webster says. He says it's the exemption from slavery, bondage, imprisonment, or control of another. If you had perfect liberty, you would not be under the control of another. Let's think about that for a moment. You wanted to drive an automobile, so you went down and worked real hard to study and make yourself approved to get a driver's license. Do you remember that? Now, you got this driver's license, then you get out on the highway, and you want to drive 110 miles an hour, and you do. And so pretty soon, there's some guy comes up behind you, and he's making a big scene with red lights and blue lights and white lights, and, you know, and he's got his siren going. And so you pull over and stop, and he comes up, and he wants to control you. And he says, you're driving too fast, or you're driving erratically, or you're driving drunk. And he may even arrest you. He may use force. He may use violence. Sometimes they even use deadly force on people right out there on the roads, on the highways. Boys and girls, that's the opposite to liberty. See, the very definition of liberty is freedom from external restraint or compulsion. Did you get that? It's freedom from external restraint or compulsion. So, you know, when you're out there driving on the highway and the highway patrolman comes up and he's enforcing his 2,000 statutes, judgments, and commandments, 2,000 traffic laws. Now, remember old Judge Schmidt asked me how many rights I had, and I would have thought about 100. He said, you've got 1,100 of these rights. Did you know you've got 2,000 duties as a driver in your state? 2,000 duties. Duties to either perform or to resist or to avoid performing some act. 2,000 of those. 2,000 plus of those. Now, think about this for a second, because in the Bible, there's a statute. I got to tell you the statute here. It's in Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 2. Deuteronomy 4, 2. It's repeated again in Deuteronomy 12, verse 32. So, 4, 2 and 12, 32. Can you remember those two? If you're driving in your car, let me flip over here and see if I can find these two statutes here. And I'll just read them for you, verbatim, right out of the scripture themselves. It's a prohibition against making law. That's right, it's a prohibition against making law. And I noticed that when I'm watching TV that the representatives and senators and the president, they're just constantly preaching new law, more laws, as if 2.5 million laws aren't near enough. We've got to have more laws. We've got to have a Patriot Act. We've got to have Homeland Security. We've got to have safety and security in our airports. We've got to have safety and security on our trains. We've got to have more safety and security on our Greyhound buses. We have to have national identification cards. We haven't got enough laws. 2.5 million isn't enough. So let me ask you this. Would 5 million, if we doubled all the laws that we have in America, and we just said, let's have twice as many laws, now we'll have 5 million. Would that be enough? Would that be enough? Think about that. Do you know the 2.5 million laws that you have now? Now double that. We'll have twice as many laws. Are you going to know any more law when we double it than you know today? So God, who runs the entire universe on 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, said, whatsoever thing I command you, observe to do it. You shall not add thereto, nor diminish from it. He said, whatever I tell you to do, do it. And then don't add anything to it, and don't take anything away from it. The very first statute enacted by the legislature of Missouri in 1820, the very first statute that they put on there, said that the common law of England shall be the law of Missouri, except when the legislature amends. How'd they word that? No, they said amends or changes or adds to or abolishes, except when the legislature adds or abolishes or amends or changes it. Boys and girls, the only purpose for a legislature is to add or subtract or to multiply or to divide the law of God. They don't exist for any other purpose. Hillary Clinton isn't in Congress to do anything other than, I know you're going to say run for president, but other than to create new laws. Barbara Boxer and Dianne Feinstein and Hillary, you know, they get together, you know, like women do, and they talk, and they talk about, well, what kind of new laws can we saddle these people with next week? We don't have enough. 2.5 million isn't enough. We need to enact another law next week. Compulsory insurance laws for health insurance in California. And compulsory vaccination laws for children in Texas. We don't have enough vaccination laws. We don't have enough health laws. We got to have more. We got to have more gun control laws. 25,000 gun control laws in the United States. Hell, they've got less gun control in Iraq than they have in America. Just thought I'd point that out. And so they got to have more gun control law, more gun control, more regulations, more laws for you to know. And here's God, he says here in Deuteronomy 12, verse 32, he says, now don't do that. He started off here in Deuteronomy 4. You know, he's got a little story to tell here. Deuteronomy 4, verse 2. And then he made that observation the first time over here. He said, you shall not add unto the word which I command you, and neither shall you diminish aught from it, that you may keep the commandments of the eternal your God, which I command you. Now, when you go to church, the preachers, they come along and say, oh, no, that's wrong. God is wrong. He made a mistake again. Thank God for all these preachers out here, you know, that correct all of God's mistakes. I don't know what the hell we'd do without them. But they tell you, well, you should obey all the laws of the state. You should obey all the laws of your state. I was in court one time. Old Charlie Brown, he's our local judge at the time. He says, well, Gordon, tell you what I'm going to do. I'm feeling big-hearted today. I'll put you out on probation if you will agree to obey all the laws of Missouri for the next 12 months. And I said, hell, Judge, I don't even know what all the laws of Missouri are. And if I could obey all of the laws of Missouri for the next 12 months, I suppose I would have obeyed all of the laws of Missouri for the last 12 months, in which case we wouldn't be here in court today, would we? So I declined. I said, no, sir, I don't believe for a minute that I can obey all the laws of the state of Missouri for the next 12 months. I always tell people that when they come to law school, they say, well, I'm going to obey all the laws of God and they get real religious. And I'm going to obey all the laws of God. I said, well, can you tell me how many there are? And they look at you like, huh? Can you tell me how many laws God has given us in the Bible? And people, they don't know. So if you got a pen and paper, write it down. It's 133. You know how many statutes, judgments, and commandments there are? 759. Write that down. Now you know. That doesn't mean that you can go out and practice the law of God because you don't know what the laws are, but at least now you know how many there are. And I told you here in America, this is an aggregate now. This is the federal law, state law, and your county law and your city ordinances, 2.5 million estimated, and being added to at the rate of 47 pages a day. And boys and girls, every one of those laws impairs your liberty to some degree. It impairs your freedom. For instance, next time you want to go fly on an airplane and some guy pulls you out of the line and he says, bend over, pull down your pants, I want to look up the crack of your you-know-what to see if you're carrying explosives. That's very, very personally intrusive, children. That is the antithesis. That is the exact opposite of freedom and liberty. Well, of course, unless you're an exhibitionist and you want to flash everybody. I mean, you know, there are people like that. They want to go out and expose their bodies to you know, certain people, not just everybody, but certain people. And so they wear a trench coat and they're naked underneath. And so they open the trench coat and they show their bodies and then they rush off, you know, like the streak. Now, except for those guys, you know, the rest of us that are kind of normal. And we wear clothes because we're hiding something. I always laugh at people, you know, and they say, well, if you don't have anything to hide, you know, what are you afraid of? And I always ask them, what in the hell are you wearing clothes for if you don't have anything to hide? Children, I got a whole bunch of stuff I want to hide, and I don't want you to know about. All right, so when we take a look at freedom and liberty, we grouse a lot and we complain a lot, but if you've got a driver's license, you're subject to the 2000 traffic codes that are available. If you've got a birth certificate and a marriage license along with children, Governor Perry has every reason to have the state's children vaccinated. The state of Texas believes in vaccination, whether you do or not. And so the suggestion that I have for people is, that why don't you get your children back from the state of Texas? Why don't you learn what your rights are, and then why don't you exercise those rights? You know, rather than practice the laws of the state of Texas, why don't you practice the laws of God, which everybody is in agreement over. By the way, did you know that the state of Texas believes in the Ten Commandments and thinks that you ought to practice those? Did you know that? Yeah, and if you've got a pen and paper, you could write this down. It's called Public Law 97-280. It's Statute 96-1211. Statute 96-1211. And Congress said that we ought to study and apply the teachings of the Scripture in the lives of individuals, families, and so on. Did you know that? Congress of the United States. And did you know that the 14th Amendment binds that congressional statute to Governor Perry in Texas? Well, if you didn't know, now you do. Now you do. Yeah, the 14th Amendment, that cursed piece of trash that was enacted as one of the Reconstruction Amendments, actually sometimes works for us. And there's one of the examples of how that constitutional amendment works for you. It binds the acts of Congress on Governor Perry of Texas. Now, the Supreme Court of the United States made an observation one time in a case that they did called Seeger versus the United States, and they laid out 5 winning and 5 losing arguments on religious free exercise. But in the discussion, in the body of the case, they made this observation concerning the law of God, and they said that there is a higher duty than duty to the United States, and that is loyalty. They used the word loyalty. That is duty or loyalty to God. That could be Allah, too, for you Muslims. Could be Allah or Buddha. Or God, or Jesus, or, you know, whoever you think God is. They're very liberal that way. They'll let you decide. Anyway, the Supreme Court and Congress, now, they're in agreement. They think that the law of God is superior to the laws of Congress or the laws of the state of Texas. And then God weighed in on the subject also in Acts 5, verse 29. Acts 5, verse 29. So you Christians can listen to this because it's in the New Testament. Oftentimes, you know, I'm citing from the Scripture, you know, some law, some statute somewhere, and they say, oh, my God, that comes from the Old Testament. We don't follow the Old Testament. Well, you can follow this one because it's in the New Testament. So, Acts 5, verse 29. And for you Jews, you just go back to Deuteronomy 4:2 and 12:32. But here in the New Testament, for Christians, we have this one here in Acts 5, verse 29. He said, Peter and the other apostles answered and said, we ought to obey God rather than men. So, you know, if Governor Perry says that you guys ought to have vaccinations for your children, and God says, no, that's the temple of the Holy Spirit, and you ought not to do that. Governor Perry, I don't know what his personal beliefs are, but he's bound by the 14th Amendment. Congress said the First Amendment applies. They even thought Public Law 97-280 was a good idea. The Supreme Court thought it was a good idea, and so did God. Everybody's in agreement. God, the Supreme Court, and the Congress of the United States. So going back to what I said when I started here tonight, I said that here in the United States, all of the rights that were available to you as an American in 1787 are available to you today if you knew how to claim them. But the problem is that most Americans don't know how to claim their rights. They don't know how many rights they have. They don't know where those rights are located. They don't know how to claim those rights. But they really complain a lot when the sergeant comes in and imposes upon them some requirement, or the highway patrolman imposes upon them some restriction, or the building department or somebody else gets in their face, they say, well, we're losing our freedoms. I don't think you're losing them. I think you threw them away. Threw them away is my take on it. Because nobody stuck a gun in my back and said, you march on down to the post office and get a social security number, or put a gun to my head and said, here, you sign here for this driver's license or die. Nobody ever did that to me. Every time I impaired my liberty, every time I impaired my freedom, I went down and worked hard to qualify as a slave. The government just doesn't let you walk in there and say, hey, I'm tired of this free man crap. I want to be a slave. They tell you, no, you got to qualify to be a slave. I remember I went down to get my social security number, my national ID number. See? And this nice lady behind the counter, see, I went in there and I said, I want to deliver papers for the Humboldt Standard. And the route manager says, I got to have a social security number, so here I am, give me one. And she says, not so fast there, sonny. You don't just march in here and demand a social security number. Slavery is for an elect few, and you're not one of them. Now, you got to prove that you were born in America. You got to prove that you're a native. You got to go home and get your birth certificate, sonny, or your baptism certificate, or a couple of affidavits or something. I was really crestfallen. I went back home, reported to my daddy that I went down to get my social security number, and she wouldn't give it to me. So I got to get my paperwork in order. You got to get your papers in order, children. And then I marched down there, and she said, ah, well, okay. Well, and you know, you want to be a slave. Well, here you are. And so she gave me my slave number, and that launched me on my career as a perpetual credit debt serf for, you know, about 50 years. So now I gave you the definition of freedom, and then I gave you the definition of liberty. Now I want to tell you another story about liberty. In the Bible, the word liberty is used about 25 times. About 25 times. And there's one definition of liberty in here that I think was pretty apropos. It's in James 1, verse 25. So let me see if I can find James here in the Bible. I know it's in here somewhere. Somewhere between Genesis and Revelation, there's a little letter in here written by the apostle Paul. Here it is, James 1, verse 25. You got to be patient with me because I'm an old man, number one. I'm just a plumber. I ain't been to cemetery. And he says, but whoso looketh into the perfect law of liberty and continueth therein, he being not a forgetful hearer, but a doer of the work, this man shall be blessed in his deed. Did you catch that first sentence? But whoso looks into the perfect law of liberty and continues therein, the law of God, that is the Ten Commandments and the 749 supporting statutes and judgments, collectively are called in the scripture the perfect law of liberty. Perfect law of liberty. Just thought I'd share that one with you. Now, we used to have an old adage in this country. We don't use it anymore, but it used to be an old adage, that he who is governed best is governed least. You ever heard that? It's an old adage. He who is governed best is governed least. And the moral behind that is that if you want to be governed least, you have to be the most responsible. And that's because freedom and liberty require responsibility. Now, let's just test it for a minute. You know, if people were to drive their automobiles sensibly, you know what I say by sensibly, you know, at a reasonable rate of speed that just doesn't scare the living hell out of everybody around you, you know, like a 17-year-old high school kid. Those high school kids, they just scare the living hell out of me. See, when I was 17 years old, I thought it was pretty chic, but, you know, today getting old and full of years and having survived all of these near misses in the past, I say, well, I don't want to get any closer to death than I have to. And so I drive a little more sensibly than I did when I was 17, 18, 20, longer. And so, you know, if everybody were to drive sensibly, I suppose everybody in America, just for starters, obeyed all the speed laws. Nobody speeds in America. Let's just do this for a day. Let's not get overwhelmed here. Let's just drive for a day. And then let's try this. Everybody stops at the red lights. And everybody stops at the stop signs, drives on the right side of the road, and doesn't cross the double yellow line. Let's suppose that everybody in America obeyed all 2,000 traffic statutes and did it perfectly all the time. Why would you need a policeman out there on the highway? Wouldn't they be redundant, superfluous, unnecessary, a waste of time and taxpayers' money? Evidently, we need 2,000 traffic statutes to spell out with specificity, thou shalt stop at the stop sign. Now, you know, being literate and all, when I drive down the street and I see this STOP, you know, it says stop, I say to myself, okay, I look both ways as I'm approaching the stop sign, and I say, nobody's coming, so I don't need to stop. I'll just keep on going. I slow down, though. You know, I was going 50, but now I'm only going 10. You know, what if I looked at the sign and I says, oh, my God, it doesn't say slow down. It says stop. And so assuming that I believed that the sign meant what it said, and I actually stopped, well, then what in the hell do you need a traffic cop for? I mean, if everybody did that. And so the Bible, you know, I think it was Paul that made this observation. It says the law is written for the lawbreaker, not the law practitioner.
So if we could all practice the law that says thou shalt not commit adultery, see, we wouldn't have any more Megan's laws, because there wouldn't be any more perverts, there wouldn't be any child molesters, because everybody would be practicing all of the laws regarding sexual relationships among all of the peoples all of the time, and we would all be following the statutes in Leviticus chapter 18, so therefore why would we need a policeman? Ah. But because there are some lawbreakers out there, and so you got these lawbreakers out there. Now let's go back here to Governor Schwarzenegger. He wants to make sure that you have health insurance. Now I'm trying to avoid health insurance like I avoid AIDS, herpes, and VD. There are 18 health laws in the Bible. I practice all 18. I don't get sick. I don't need health insurance, and I don't want it. I don't want to pay the $10,000 a year for health insurance, and I don't want anybody else to pay it for me. I don't want any limited liability, period, end of report. I don't need health insurance, kids. But most of you people out there eat pig and shellfish, and white flour and white bread and sugar from CNH, pure cane sugar, and you eat a lot of fat and blood, and you go down and eat a lot from McDonald's, and you break a lot of health laws. All of you people need health insurance. I don't deny it. And all of you people that violate those laws need health insurance. What about the five or six of us left in America that practice all of the health laws of the Scripture? Should we have to be compelled to pay the penalty of $10,000 a year for health insurance like all of the rest of the criminals? With that, I'll leave you mulling over that until next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. So let me remind you that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement, and the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on a compact desk. No children involved here, just adults. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in public interest, and the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. Time's up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So tell them, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.